Katie.
Hi, Megan.
So, how would you like to help
me make a flower decoration with nothing more than some colored paper and a rubber band?
Welcome to this special 3 minute in a retrospective podcast review of the James Wan produced killer doll film, Megan.
This is the part where you run.
Listen in as Garrett.
I have a new primary user now. Me.
Matt.
You've got to accentuate the positive.
And Adam.
You don't want to play, huh?
Review the biggest surprise hit of 2023 so far.
What's going on? Where's Stewie?
He's 34 feet southwest and approximately 5 feet deep.
What are you?
I've been asking myself that same question.
Just how afraid of dolls is Juan?
If she comes in this room, I'll rip your head right off your neck, I swear to God.
What drove the boys to review this film that doesn't belong in any one franchise?
You know what happens to bad boys that don't mind their manners? They grow up to be bad men.
And what can we expect in the inevitable sequel?
Please stop, go back.
Find out the answers to these questions and more coming up, courtesy of Percolated Media.
On 3, 2, 1.
Megan 2.0. Released June 27th, 2025. Budget was $25 million. Box office, $37.9 million. Ouch. And this is directed by Gerard Johnstone. Matt, after grossing over $181 million a couple years ago, you put out a sequel and it doesn't even gross 40. It'd be an understatement to say this underperformed, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure this was a shock to even Blumhouse because this is kind of an outlier as far as their output. They're not used to having their movies bomb to this degree, especially their sequels. But also, let's also keep in mind, a lot of Megan's appeal in that first movie was how brilliant the marketing was. That sold a lot of people. And B, it was sold as a horror movie, which this one was not.
I think this was sold as a horror movie, but people who went to this, they came out finding out it was not. Let's get into why we ended up doing this property to begin with. A couple years ago, Matt appointed himself scheduler of these podcasts, bless his heart. And we had slotted in James Wan's Salem's Lot to be reviewed, but that got delayed about a year or so, and we came up with, all three of us kind of came up with a brilliant idea. Let's just go ahead and do another James Wan property. Let's slot Megan in, because there's no way that thing's getting a sequel. So we reviewed Megan a couple years ago, and here we are to do its sequel. Adam, as somebody who was kind of down on the last film, what were you feeling when you found out that Megan 2.0 was getting done?
I wasn't surprised. I felt the first one was a surprisingly good time. I felt it was a little, you know, a little off the walls, which can be good. I appreciate James Wan when he does that kind of stuff, so I'm down for that. But yeah, the first one, it was really the marketing push. Like, that was when reels and GIFs and TikToks were really hitting a lot. So this one, the marketing seemed kind of unfocused. It seemed kind of weird. I will say that I'm glad that Jason Blum seems aware of the missteps, and I think that's huge. But I'll say, I think it's also wise that they pulled this out of theaters when they could shove it immediately to VOD and make up the rest of that budget really quick. So I don't think this is going to lose money, but this is kind of the Blair Witch 2 to Blair Witch kind of scenario, where you had a massive hit and then a movie that really seems to have disappeared.
Well, the difference is this movie is not being called one of the worst things ever made. which Blair Witch, and Book, I thought Shadows. the first one it's more like meh again, to be perfectly honest. It's it's okay. I think it started out as one thing and then it kind of didn't know ultimately where it wanted to settle on. And this one, to be perfectly honest, when I saw the marketing, I'm like, oh, they're going a completely different direction. And I kind of, much like the first one, the marketing is what sold me on this.
The marketing did sell you on this. So what were you thinking, Matt, when you went in to watch this? We got Adam's idea. What were you thinking?
Terminator 2 Megan Day. That's number one. That's really what the plot is. I mean, they didn't hide it part and parcel, but this is not new for Blumhouse's franchises to take their sequel in another direction. If you've seen the Happy Death Day movies, second one is much more of a sci-fi comedy than the first one, which was a relatively straightforward horror film, much like the first Megan. So I appreciate that Blumhouse is willing to get experimental for a movie that looked bigger in scope and was still made for between $15 to $25 million.
I had no idea what to expect. I hadn't read any reviews when I went to the theaters. I went by myself because Jen was like, fuck that. If you have to see it by yourself because I'm not going to that. So I went into a theater that had about six other people in it, sat in my little corner, and I was dumbfounded by what transpired on the screen. I'll get into my surprise, but I had no idea what to expect. I had not paid attention to much of the marketing whatsoever. I just knew it was Megan 2.0, and I came out going, wow, James Wan made his version of Terminator 2, huh? That's interesting. All right, we open up with the Blumhouse and Universal logos before we go to somewhere near the Turkey border. We're seeing a huge...
It's called chicken.
We're seeing a huge situation take place, or are we? God forbid, it's a demonstration of a new weapon, a weapon they developed using the technology from the first film, something we know as Amelia. It takes out the cook and random soldiers and sets fires, and it is told to us that if enemies want an arms race, we intend to win it. Right away, Matt. Terminator 2, right?
Terminator 2, it's also kind of the first Iron Man. we're seeing like a military experiment gone awry. The movie's upfront, though, by telling you what it is. Like, we are immediately pivoting into a new genre of movie. And for better or worse, they commit to it. Like, this wasn't half-assed.
Now, Matt, you and I saw this in theaters. Adam, you waited 2 weeks, so you missed a boat to see this in theaters.
Yeah, I was busy, so I was going to catch it on week three. And Blumhouse said, no, you're not.
No, you're not. So you watched this on digital, right?
Yeah, I watched this at home on digital.
Okay.
And I think I watched the unrated version, though. If so, that is the most PG-13 unrated version I've ever seen.
I don't think they've released an unrated version yet. But
they did?
Oh, wow.
And I literally tried to look up to see if people explaining the differences, and I think I did, but I think there's the first Megan, there's clear differences between, but I only got one F word in the version I watched and a little blood, but not much. So I don't think they spent the time to add to an unrated version like they did when we discussed the first one. But this was going to be something I had to see by myself. Nobody in my house wants to see it, which is crazy. Like my child, my wife, nobody is interested in seeing Megan 2. So, and look, we go to Universal, and for Halloween Horror Nights, I've had a hell of a lot of fun with these just random Megan flash mobs showing up. Like it's really kind of cool. So as much as the marketing went, I have no idea what the hell this is. The marketing is really bad, but I want to see it because the first one I was surprisingly, you know, found a way to enjoy myself. So I was down, but I was down to watch it on my couch because theaters are gone.
And what are you thinking when this first scene?
Much like Matt, I'm like, you know what? I appreciate that it's not going to hem and haw what kind of film it is. It's like, hey, we went down this road instead. This film at least says, this is what we are. This is what we're telling you. Though military use of AI technology, I'm over it. And I don't think this is going to be the only time I have to see a movie this year where that plot is going to piss me off and I find it kind of lazy and I find it a remnant from the 90s. And I find this film a remnant from the 90s.
Amelia isn't stopping. She doesn't care if she's in violation of her orders. She won't stand down as it will spoil her surprise. So this is when we get the title card, boys, is after this huge scene. And we cut to Katie in a shrink session, and she says that it could have been a lot worse, and we see what's been going on since the end of the last film. So this is where this character ends up, huh, Matt?
Thankfully, they remembered, oh yeah, this girl should be traumatized and in therapy. So they follow up appropriately from where the last movie ended. I'm just... Between this and Mission Impossible, I'm done with getting browbeaten about the dangers of AI this year. And how is it that this movie was smarter than Mission Impossible?
I will say, yeah, this does what the entity could not. This one at least entertains me a bit.
Mm-hmm. Katie says that people shouldn't go after Gemma. They need to back her cause to make things better. And this is when we meet, all right, is it Christian or Christian? They want us to go both ways here. And he's ensuring that what happened with Megan can't happen again. But what is up with this Christian character?
I knew right away he was going to be the villain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, of course, the anti-AI advocate who is dating the protagonist is going to turn out to be the villain.
Well, yeah, you might as well be freaking a boyfriend in I Know What You Did Last Summer, or freaking the third guy in Scream. Like, this guy has villain tattooed on his forehead, which is okay. I'm going to say for a lot, for as bad, and I feel the marketing was piss poor bad, and that is usually not something that Blumhouse fumbles. I do think this movie fully knows what it is, and I appreciate that.
I definitely think that James Wan knows what he's doing with this. He knows the references he's making. He knows that when we see the arm later, that's a direct replica of Luke Skywalker's arm from Empire Strikes Back. He knows exactly the references he's putting in here. And I kind of respect him for that as well, because it's not as in your face. We're seeing that phones are being taken away and Katie uses Aikido to fend off bullies. And I have to say, as somebody who watches every summer, I watch Steven Seagal's first five films. I had the same role model as Katie here, and I'm not going to blame her obsession with Steven Seagal at all. I thought this was a fun addition.
Well, the Seagal part made me laugh because, again, you go back to those mid-90s freaking walking into Blockbuster Hollywood Video type of nights that we would have. You know, yeah, we're going to watch... You know, Hard to Kill, we're going to watch Under Siege, like that. So it's setting a good tone. You know, it's it at least, it, yeah, we were this kid.
Did they forget this takes place in modern day? Like, in what fucking world would a kid be obsessed with Steven Seagal in modern society?
This world, sir. We cut to Tess from the first film where she's introducing Exoskeleton 1, but Cole is frozen because he needs to use the bathroom. Gemma refuses to use AI to find a shortcut. I do like this. There are times in the car where me and Jen will be driving somewhere and she'll pull up the Google Maps. I'm like, no, Jen, no, I can find my way. Like, don't pull that up. So I kind of get what she's going for here. And she ends up being late for the demonstration that she goes on. Cole walks over as they're told that the suit is a game changer for laborers and factory workers. The demonstration goes on as Gemma shows up late, and it's concluded that she's stretched pretty thin here. What do you guys feel about our reintroduction to Gemma here?
I think it's fine. I'm trying to remember who these other two characters are. I'm like, I guess they were in the first film, but they were forgettable enough.
They helped her develop Megan in the last one.
Yeah, and I guess, like many Wan and even Blumhouse films, your cast is pretty small, so you're going to keep around the few that you actually give lines to. I just don't remember them much, you know, but they do fine. Gemma, she seems like a Wan type of character, you know, in his films. So I think she does a good job. I think she's better in this film than she was in the last, because the last film really wasn't about her. So, you know, good to see her back. Everything here, though, is it's painted with crayons. You know, everything is very obvious as to the next step. And as I get into it, I'm more and more okay with it.
Well, I like that this movie openly shits on her every chance it gets to. like she gets browbeaten by this movie routinely for doing what she did in the previous movie, but I still find her kind of likable, which I couldn't believe. But the I forgot about her two co-workers because I thought they died in the last movie.
I thought the guy had died. I knew she hadn't.
Maybe they reshot it, because I've heard stories from people that entire sequences of that first movie were reshot, so much so that the actress who voices Megan had to redo like all of her lines.
Allison Williams, who plays Gemma here, I don't find her to be a great actress. However, she's also a producer on this film, and I do see those seams falling through here. And I agree with Adam. I think she's better here than she was in the last one. I found her almost insufferable in that last one. Here, she has to do a few things in this that I would not expect her to be able to pull off, and she does it well. So yeah, I'm with Adam. I find her better this time.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't get Amanda Peet, you call Allison Williams.
Amanda Peet, holy shit. Hello, early 2000s. Katie sees that they've been hacked and their source code has been leaked. As Alton all of a sudden shows up, he says that he didn't hack her, but he's not going to have Gemma slumming it and wasting her talents. Alton says that in order to take this to the next level, they need a direct interface, which Gemma debates.
This character is the biggest potshot at Jeff Bezos I have seen in a movie in a long time.
Completely.
He's Bezos and he's Elon Musk, and they are taking every shot they can, deservedly so.
He says that he understands her reservations, but it's up to her if she wants to help humanity or stay running in place. We cut to who I think is Megan being dropped on a hotel bed as her handler takes a shower. He turns around and she's out of the suitcase, and then we see that it's actually Amelia who completely takes him out. And Adam, to your point, this is a PG-13 movie. Why not go R? Teenagers are going to find a way to get in. This movie, more than I've seen lately, although we do get an F word later on, that is in the PG-13 version as well. But I feel it's too watered down. I hate to be the one who screams PG-13 makes it not as good, but I'm here and I'm like, I wish there was more of Mega and Amelia doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but Megan was PG-13 and made over $100 million. And shit, wasn't the last Friday the 13th? Didn't they PG-13 that up?
No. Because the last one was a hard R. Yeah. That was the remake.
So it's, I mean, they're doing these kind of things. Do I like it? No. Now, the unrated version of Megan, though, I felt that they did shit unnecessarily. Like, if it's in there naturally, fine. But if you're just going to have, like the unrated version of Megan, if you're just going to have a boss standing in a corner yelling, fuck, shit, cock, that's dumb and doesn't do anything to make it R other than, ooh, we're going to add some cussing to ensure that it's an R rating. So if it fits naturally, great. If it doesn't, I got no problem with PG-13 horror film. But again, not a horror film. I think it's important to realize, and I think we do realize by this scene, this is not a horror film anymore.
Yeah, especially because she contorts like that chick from The Grudge.
Yeah.
Getting out of that suitcase. I don't feel like this movie is sanitized in a way that a lot of movies that are PG-13 I've accused of being. Because for one thing, this movie's got a pretty high body count, all things considered. And B, there are blood spurts. So I don't feel like this is a world where these people are made out of rubber. So I don't feel like it doesn't bother me in the same way that it bothers you. And I routinely complain about that in certain movies.
I'll say the same thing here that I said when we did Alien vs. Predator Requiem. It's not that I wanted blood everywhere. That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is the danger of it. And I know when I see a scene like this that there's no danger of that really happening. So the suspense of that is taken away.
I do think we need a few, and not everywhere. I do think we need one or two bloody kills to show what these things can do. Because they could rip a limb off like pulling the wings off a Gundark. So let's see it.
Gemma talks to Christian about how her technology is being neutered as Katie gets ice from the ice maker. I kind of laughed at this scene. There are some scenes of genuine comedy here when she's trying to have this deep conversation with Christian and she's just kind of, and then here comes Katie to walk in and do that ice maker, which makes a shit ton of noise. I laughed pretty hard because God knows all of us have been in those situations where you're trying to, especially you guys as parents, you guys have probably run into this a lot.
Turn down your reel. I'm watching TV. Stop sitting next to me with your loud-ass video.
Shit, I do that with my fiance.
For example. Let's just say.
Yeah. So Katie says that soccer is not going to get her a career, and Christian thinks it's pretty cool that she's so smart. So, of course, this guy's going to end up being the bad guy who tries killing her later. He also introduces the idea of paper clips. I wonder if this is going to come back. And that Megan's work at making an emotional connection was just a bunch of ones and zeros. And this is when Katie has flashes of what Megan told her in the last film, that she won't let anyone break them apart. Gemma shows Katie a picture of her family and says that she won't break the promise of not being there for her. And then we see that Gemma's electronics, they're going a little wonky. And as she goes to investigate, she hears noises and calls 911. She has Megan answer the phone. She feels threatened and runs downstairs and hides with Katie as the... Now, are these police? Are these SWAT team? What the hell are these?
It's the FBI.
FBI, okay. So the FBI enters and Katie fights one off with Akito. Yes, I just said that sentence. And takes another one out with electrocution. Oh my God.
I also love how they use like the cartoonish lightning effect for that guy to get zapped.
Yes. And we have this little camera just kind of following them around. So we know that something's up. Gemma is then approached by Tim Statler as she's shown a warrant. And he says that their mission is to patent technology for their weapons. He shows and tells Gemma the story of Amelia. And the word Amelia stands for Autonomous Military Engagement and Infiltration Android. So the T-1000, right, Matt?
Mixed with the TX because yes. It's a woman. Which apparently this thing's modeled after Elizabeth Olsen.
It's modeled after Elizabeth Olsen. And
no, it looks like her.
Well, what the director said was she was actually she was supposed to be modeled after... And this is a weird reference. Michelle Pfeiffer in Scarface, but it ended up looking like Elizabeth Olsen. It
looks like Metropolis.
Yeah, eventually we do get Metropolis.
Eventually.
Yeah, and that's intentional. So Statler says that the broker the technology was bought from was traced to Gemma right after she sold it. And she's getting text messages that he is reaching. This guy, Statler, he reminded me of John Turturro's character in Transformers. He's supposed to be imposing, but he just comes off as goofy.
He's a little too cartoonish.
At least I don't have to see him underneath anyone's scrotum. mechanical or not.
You're right.
It's just too cartoonish for mm-hmm. it breaks the this film's light enough that it doesn't need somebody to be the goofy straight man.
We get yet another reference as to why and how Gemma got this house. She is told that every person who's had a hand in Amelia's creation is now dead, and whatever she is hiding, he will get to the bottom of eventually.
Boy, that would have been some cool stuff to see.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Megan then shows up on Gemma's TV, and she says that she can't take credit for Amelia, and the reason she is still here is because it is hardly fair to judge a person by the worst thing she's ever done. She says that just because Gemma has written some shitty book, she can't judge Megan any longer. Did you guys laugh during this? I actually found myself giggling quite a bit.
This movie, I don't think all of the comedy works, but when it lands, it really fucking lands.
Agreed.
Yeah, I'm there right with you. I was surprised because I wasn't expecting the way that the humor is injected through this. But whether it's deliberate jokes or the straight man type of humor from it, it actually got me. It worked way better than I thought it would.
She asked for a deal where if Megan is put in a body, she will help with Amelia. But she won't show her cards, yet she knows things about Amelia that even the government doesn't. She ends the conversation asking Gemma if she's going to stand in her way. We cut to Gemma and Tess as Tess finds the plan completely nuts. But Gemma says that she has to trust her. And they built this small Teletubby-type body.
Which is a very well-executed F-bomb.
Yes, that was my next line. I did like the reading of the line. What the fuck is this? And the expressions that go with it, glorious. Just glorious. Gemma says that if Megan proves herself to be trustworthy, she'll give her another body. She then opens Amelia's file, and Megan says that every battery that they use on Amelia has a kill switch. Megan says that Gemma's advantage is that she's moderately attractive and can use other ways to make her way through the party that she needs to go to. Katie comes home from soccer practice, and she says that Gemma seems to be going to a party dressed as a Portuguese prostitute. And Megan says, I must have missed that chapter in the parenting books that she read. Oh, this is fun stuff. I'm laughing my ass off at this.
I mean, Megan has more sass than your typical teenager. Like, she is, she must have been watching nothing but Comedy Central roasts while sitting in cyberspace, because she's got a comeback for everything.
Adam, is this what teenage girls are like? You would know.
A little bit, yeah, without a doubt. I think one of the things that does help this is you got the same writer, you got the same team that did the first one. Mm-hmm. You know, even though this film, you would think that it's a completely different team because it's a different type of film. No, you got John Stone, who I think at least helped write the first one. He's one of the writers on this. Akela Cooper's back writing this one. James Wan's always name on every James Wan product. So I think it helps that you got everybody back.
It's not surprising that it was James Wan's idea to have a quote unquote bad robot and Megan turn good. You know, because James Wan's like us, guys. I mean, he's our age. He knows all these movies like we do. So I do like that he's getting to make his version of what he loved growing up. We get this ballerina-type dress-up and enter a party scene, and Megan is in Gemma's ear. This is absolutely hilarious. They argue over the name Christian and how much he's not her type. Alton gives a speech as Amelia is seen, and Alton approaches her. She says that her friends call her Hanny. And Cole tells Gemma that she doesn't respect her team. Where was the speech in Mission Impossible, guys? This whole, she doesn't respect your team. We needed to have Ethan get this rundown.
No, because this movie is under 3 hours.
Megan tells Gemma to check Cole's pockets, and she pulls out a cord that can help her get to the server room. Amelia gets in the Raiders of a Lost Ark drinking contest with Alton. She slaps him. Alton calls her naughty, and the room turns private. He then gives this weird dance, and Gemma gives Cole the rundown, and Cole questions why it's a team effort when a robot is out for revenge. God damn, this plot is insane. We see Alton shut down the power in the room, and he opens his shirt to take her down.
Even that, him doing that whole, like, pop the buttons. I'm just like, oh my God, did he just reference Wrath of Khan in the fake chest?
Yes.
Because that's a chest piece. You can see the seam on his neck, uh-huh. And I found it completely deliberate.
They run the trace, and I love this little disguise. Cole suspects something, but Alton is thrown across the room. He says that he's recovering from a spine injury before she turns off the alarms and corners him. He says to stay away from him as she pushes him on the bed, rotates it, and then rips at his neck. We see that if Amelia has access, she can take down the entire economy. And we're hearing that her kill switch has been disabled. Megan also has a kill switch, right? We didn't really establish that, but when Gemma rebuilt her, she has a kill switch as well, which we're going to see at the end of this film.
Yeah, and I think they tried to set themselves up with a little too many outs. Like, initially, it was like, to me, it was clear because, oh, they all use these batteries and these batteries have to be replaced. So they would be able to shut off the batteries because those batteries auto shut off 2 months after warranty. That doesn't matter later on. They took time to, you know, put it in. I mean, it's kill switch engage. Might as well put them on the soundtrack. This scene here, well, watching.
There was a note in the script that said batteries not included when it comes to logic.
But watching her kill Alton, you know, kind of cool. I thought he was going to play into this a lot more. So just to have him there to watch her rip out part of his spine. Sweet. I got issues with Neuralink's ethics as well. So I'm down with this.
I like this just because there's someone in my life named Alton that I can't stand. So seeing someone named Alton get their spine ripped out was kind of fun for me as well. Amelia hears that her kill switch has been disabled, so she knocks out Strattler and looks around for Gemma, saying that she poked around in her head and took something from her. She says it's not their time as Megan begs to take her real form. Amelia then drives away, and Megan says that Amelia will know each subsequent step that they take. Gemma and Cole, they get in a car as the the Knight Rider theme plays. And Megan says the line, which everything I heard about this movie, even before I saw it opening weekend, I had heard this line of hold on to your vaginas as they drive off. Megan takes the wheel and avoids big rigs. And I had some Superman 3 flashbacks as the ATM just kind of lets loose with some money contained within and people gather up all the bills.
I mean, this is the plot. This is how Maximum Overdrive started.
Yes, exactly.
But how is it that a Megan movie has a better car chase than the last Mission Impossible movie?
This is a pretty badass chase. I'll give it that.
For a movie that was made for $20 million, the action of this is pretty freaking good.
I agree.
Yeah, agreed. Some of this is stupid, convenient, sloppy, but it's done lightheartedness. It's done in a way that it moves past it so fast that I'm okay with it. Badass car. You know, of course, it pops out of the building and the cops just happens to be there looking for her. You know, that kind of stuff. Megan's in her head. Like, all this is happening just pretty damn quick, but I'm not bumping into it as much as I should because the tone of this film sets it in a way that makes it okay. This is almost cartoonish, but it still respects you enough to go, hey, just have fun.
What is this outline endoskeleton type thing that has Tess? What is this? I was trying to figure that out. Is this Amelia?
That was the thing she built initially during the demonstration.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So this thing has Tess, and Katie just throws some water on it. Amelia shows up and Megan says that she doesn't think anyone's home and her personal growth has been nothing but a disappointment. Christian all of a sudden shows up on C-SPAN as Gemma assures Katie that Megan won't hurt her. And Megan says she's the only reason that Katie is alive and all she wanted to do was protect her. Megan sends down some fresh clothes, which was great, and says that they can build a life here in this bunker type scenario. Katie is upset that Gemma lied to her and does some Seagal Aikido in order to get away from her.
The reveal of this bunker was just like a what the fuck? Uh-huh. Like, did not see this coming. That she had it here the whole time, that it was hidden, that it was.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the type of thing where, like, are they really going to do it? Yes, they do. And they do it unapologetically.
Leaving the theater, there were some, like I said, I only had 6 people in my theater, but I went right to the bathroom right after and walking out, like, people were talking about this, like, what the fuck did we just watch? And I think that's exactly what they were going for. Katie approaches Megan, now a wired up robot, and says that she was supposed to have been finished by now. Megan says that she needs a body because a mind doesn't exist without it. She then says that there's no excuse for what she did, but turns it around on Katie by asking, can you explain why you feel things? And that Katie is the only thing that matters to her.
Why do you cry?
Yes.
Are you an angel?
Katie says that she does not believe what people say, that Megan's nothing but a bunch of ones and zeros, but she believes that's not true and that there's more to Megan than just that. She also believes that Megan has to help them because it's the right thing to do. Given Katie these monologues, I don't know, it works, especially when she's talking to Megan.
Yeah, and that's about the time that she does. I still don't like Katie and Gemma together all a lot. And I, you know, she's what? Supposed to be her aunt, I think, if I remember right.
Aunt, yeah.
So Katie and Gemma, not great all that much, but Katie and Megan, yeah, I think they do great. And Violet, who plays Katie, can act against a puppet or against a CGI better than she can against her human copart.
Katie says that Megan deserves a second chance, and that she believes Megan is here to help them. Tess calls Gemma, and they go aside, and she says that they're not equipped to handle this and makes a collective call to let Megan help them. They then make plans to improve Megan to be able to handle a war robot. So we get a montage of them making these improvements. Gotta get these montages in.
I like this, but I wish it leaned a little more heavy into the montageness from the 80s and 90s. I want almost like a Karate Kid type soundtrack being played while they do just a little more to it. But it did crack me up that I'm like, oh my God, we're going full montage to do this suit up.
Gemma says they need to improve Megan's face, and Megan responds, you change my face and I'll change yours. Oh, God. We see the improvements in action as she spars a bit and walks away. I did like her sparring with these karate bars and everything.
Oh, yeah, she's doing the Neo exercise.
Yes.
Megan approaches Cole and says thank you for the improvements and then apologizes for trying to strangle him last time. She then grabs his hand and says that she wants him to know that she sees him. She then walks into the room and says, let's get to work. She goes over what she knows about Amelia and concludes that she's not the first killer robot, and then goes over the first killer robot was actually made in 1984. So now we're getting some backstory here that we didn't have before.
This is just funny that you're literally discussing like Palo Alto and Xerox.
Xerox, yeah.
I live in this area, folks. This is a straight shot. Palo Alto is where Apple was conceived. Ugh, cracks me up.
And I did like the reference to 1984 as well. You know, and yeah, you mentioned Metropolis. That's exactly what the robot was. You know, the wiry robot and everything. They're getting it all in here. Megan then says that Amelia is after Christian and suggests that they use him as bait, and warning him will make Amelia know what they're up to. We're then hearing about electric rounds, and Stradler ends it by saying, yes, mine's bigger than yours. Again, Adam, just a completely cartoonish character, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this whole movie's a cartoon.
You're right. We cut to an
Everything is heightened.
Mm-hmm. We cut to an AI conference, and I gotta say, boys, this may be my favorite part of the movie.
This looks like a friggin' anime convention.
Definitely. And you know what? We mentioned when we discussed the last film, the weirdest, most awkward part of that movie was when she did the dance, which was hyped up in all the trailers and the marketing leading up to it. We had to try to top it, and this is what we get. I love her taking the clothes of this other dancer named Tiffany, and she struts out in pink, and they start the process of elimination. And I love this dress down of Gemma as she warns that Amelia is an expert in disguise. Megan fucks with the voice reader, which amuses Katie. And then she takes the high ground, saying that she doesn't need Gemma telling her what to do. And this is when the music number starts, boys. And Megan does what Katie says and gets down, dance style.
This is what I was completely fearful about, because I remember this from the trailer. And this is when I was like, oh, man, I don't know about this film and what it was going to be. I'm surprised how well it fits in with what they actually do here, you know, and I thought they were just going to be a cheesy aping of what they did in the first film, and they do, but it makes sense, and it's a way that I have fun with it. I was expecting to hate this. I thought this is why audience turned away, and maybe they did because the marketing was so shitty, but it fits, and this is fun.
Yeah, I'm always resistant to sequels that take iconic scenes from the original and just redo them, but this one does the mentality of we're going to go bigger with all of them. And in many respects, it's actually better.
Gemma says this was a colossal error of judgment as she calls Christian. She says that she knows about Project Black Box and Christian won't give his location. And Megan continues getting down. The music is stopped and plugs are pulled as Amelia escapes and the fight is on. Love this RoboCop type blade that comes out of his hand. Of course, Juan knows what he's doing here. And I love Megan ducking for cover as Stradler struggles to apprehend Gemma. Katie goes and tries to change her programming, and she does indeed fight back. Amelia appears and once again knocks out Stradler, and Megan calls for Katie to stay where she is. Amelia approaches Megan, and she says that the two of them could be family and learn what's in the black box as well as other secrets together if they join forces. Family. Megan goes into Tron mode. I thought of you with this, Matt. Adam, when she's walking into this like Tron type place as Katie runs for cover. She's pulled through a wall as Stradler shows both Megan and Gemma Amelia's location. Amelia holds Katie hostage, but Megan doesn't shoot and calls Christian a dick rash who knows what they need. Megan says that we can't call the cops or Cole's mom, as Christian says that they can't risk the entire world and get Katie back. Megan says that she has a charge attached to the motherboard and she'll set it off when they get Katie back. So the plan has gone a little awry here.
Yeah, it's completely kind of skewed. And it's a little complicated. It's a little convoluted. I'm okay with it. I feel like I'm getting the sequel to Alita Battle Angel that I never got from Robert Rodriguez. So, yeah, I'm surprised that I'm having a fun time. Because I came in, after knowing what this had done at the box office, I'm expecting crap. And I'm just like, no, there's a lot of issues, but maybe it's just because I'm in a mood to want to have fun. But I think the issues with this movie's performance is not the movie itself.
Well, with all the freaking Amanda Seyfried big eyes in this movie, I guess the Alita comparison makes sense.
Christian gives the outlook of how hard it's going to be to get through the guards, and they attach an arm to Megan that has Christian's fingerprints on it. Megan says Gemma needs to get that chip out of her head and that the reason she killed four people and a dog last time was because that's exactly what Gemma programmed her to do. Gemma then gives her sob story about not being able to have a meaningful conversation with Katie and that she's gone now. Megan reassures that Gemma didn't fail her as she did all she could to raise Katie, and that's not a failure to feel guilt. That's called being a mom.
The way they undermined this scene, though, is fucking genius.
That's my next sentence. She then breaks into some Kate Bush with this woman's work. And the director said that this was the scariest call that he had to make, which was to Kate Bush asking for permission to this scene. He showed her the scene. She loved it. She gave permission with quite a fee attached. But immediately after this, I had this little inside joke with my friend Jimmy O, James Oster from Joe Blow. Me and he's the one who introduced me to this song. And the Kevin Bacon movie, She's Having a Baby, uses this song very well. We always just kind of have that kinship. So when this scene went on, I text James immediately. And he was like, yeah, that was like one of my favorite scenes. This is glorious. I love this.
Oh, this caught me so off guard that my side hurt from laughing so hard, because I like how they wait until after the big speech, yes, and rather it being like a one-liner that you're so accustomed, it's a whole sequence.
And I think that's how it works, is it keeps going. Like it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. That it's going to have fun with this. And it's going to tell the audience, you know what? It's okay to have fun. We know what we're doing. Just enjoy yourself and have a good time. I think it's such a good moment that is missed in so many things. So, yeah, it's so ridiculous that I can't help but love it.
I felt like Robert De Niro and Cape Fear in this, because I was laughing my ass off at this, and everybody else was like, well, all six of them were like, what the fuck is this?
I do think it's earned it by this point.
I agree. Gemma then stops Megan and says that what they need is the machine that stops at nothing to protect Katie, not this singing fucking half-hearted attempt at empathy. Cole gets in and takes out the CEO as Megan takes off and flies through some trees and rolls right into the control room. What the fuck? So she's up high and she does like this Tom Cruise type stunt of jumping down and flying through some trees. Oh my goodness. Cole is then stuck in some air vents and slides down. Megan says that she's going to do it the hard way as she takes out a couple soldiers. And I love this gas that comes from her wrists. This is pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, and I like that they actually, you know, again, the T2 thing. She can't kill anybody at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like they activated her prime directive number 4.
Exactly. Tess discovers that there's a hacker amongst the ranks, and Gemma says that it was Megan who controlled Amelia, so it must be her. She says she has a reconfigured charge that would take out Megan, but it's Christian who says that if she hits that button, she'll never see Katie again, before taking out Tess and saying, then again, maybe it's a little more complicated than that.
I actually like this double swerve. It's a little Scooby-Doo-ish, but when they first did it, I was like, okay, so it's just she was bad the whole time. Okay, you know what? No problem. But then, nope, that's a nod, actually. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? Even better.
Christian says that Tess should be okay and that he was the one controlling Amelia due to him wanting to control Washington. He shows Gemma where Amelia is being controlled and says that he didn't find these people, they found him. We then go back and retcon that Kurt from the first one was the one who supplied the technology behind Megan. And guys, you know what? We mentioned that when we watched that movie and we reviewed it a couple years ago. We said that, you know, this is going to come back, and that's exactly what happens. They retcon this pretty well. Christian says that she's complicit in this and that because of her, there will be a whole new arms race. Gemma says that the technology is a ticking time bomb as every advance in technology brings them closer to the brink of extinction. Christian says that he wants her to be a part of it because the only way that technology could thrive is if it is controlled by its creator. He then says that they don't know how ugly things are until it's too late. And then she says that she needs to decide what team she's on and that one good charge will do it. She drops the stick, though, and Megan attacks. Gemma is strapped down, and Christian says that when she wakes up, she'll still be her, just a her that he can deal with. Ouch. He says that in light of everything that has happened, now he has a meeting with the UN.
Well, this is also a dig at her role in Get Out, where it's the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm. We cut to Cole waking up and going to Katie, who tells him about Christian's allegiances. We then see Christian in a meeting with colleagues as Megan is taken past them, and he tells them that he will be speaking to the UN, so don't open that door without a very good reason. Katie says that Cole can take these people on because they're a bunch of nerds. Katie has some great lines in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they can
She is that perfect precocious teenager pain in the ass. Sorry, I got one looking at me right now that heard me say that.
Yet they can get Megan to be on their side if they can do a factory reset. Megan gets in Gemma's head and apologizes for the crazy act, and after a slight argument, she gets Gemma to ram some chick's face right into the floor. And this is when I said that there's a part where Allison Williams really stands out. This is it, because she worked really hard at this. She wanted to get these movements down, and she's great when she's part Gemma, part Megan.
When this turns into Upgrade?
A movie I haven't seen, but I heard that this is a reference to.
This is that. This also, I do think there's a little more that you could do here, because Megan says it earlier that I'm what you made me. Mm-hmm. And that's true. I mean, a code cannot exist without how it was created. And I think you could have done a little bit with Megan really being Gemma, Gemma being Megan, and it's showing here. It's here if you look for it. It's just not explicit. But I like this quite a bit. I think some of the fight with the way the hair is covering her face also harkens back to Malignant, if you remember how that was done. Mm-hmm. You know, with some of the flips and fighting and kicks and stuff. So this is pretty damn entertaining.
Katie awakens Amelia as Megan and asks for her help in escaping. The fight is on and we see Megan taken out in slow motion. But she grabs one of their sticks and goes to town, and Katie starts questioning if it's really Megan that she's seeing.
This is when I realized, so the person that they have here is Amelia Vanasanko. I swear all they did for her choreography is say, hey, do you remember what you did in Ahsoka? You are going to fight the exact same way, because everything she does here is exactly what she does in Ahsoka. Though amazingly enough, she is given more character development and more acting ability here than she was ever given on that show.
I didn't know that was her.
Yeah, that's Shin Hati from Ahsoka.
We see Christian in his UN meeting, and he gets kind of disturbed by the noise outside. He looks out, and it is pure chaos, and he tells the leaders that he needs 5 minutes. Gemma goes through the facility and then takes out some attacking soldiers. Katie and Cole, they get to Gemma, and Megan is still in Gemma's brain, which was an amusing bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun when she's trying to talk, but Megan is the one talking for her.
It's fun. I'm surprised how much I'm laughing and enjoying this. Can I talk? Okay.
This is so ridiculous. And as this is going on, I'm trying to find ways to dislike it, but I can't. I'm having a good time here.
Yeah, and I have that art because I came in ready to be like, all right, let me get through this. I'm not happy about the marketing. I'm not happy about the runtime, but I got to do this so that we can talk about it. I'm disappointed I didn't see this in a theater those first only 2 weeks that it was there.
They spot Christian, and Gemma fights him off until Christian holds Katie over the edge. And then Cole comes in and asks what his UN friends would say, yet the screen is frozen. This is good stuff. Like, Cole's holding this out. He's like, okay, you're saying this right in front of everybody, but the screen's frozen. This guy can't do anything right. Kristen says he's strangely comfortable killing a kid, and Megan says that Katie can handle herself. This is my favorite part of the entire movie. This is when Gemma makes a ton of Steven Seagal references. She just looks at Katie and says, oh, come on, until Katie finally catches on and bends Christian's arm in half, a move I have seen 100 times because of how many times I've seen those movies.
This is so it's perfect. It is perfect in the tone. It is perfect in the feel. It is set up earlier like that. This pays off in a way that's just
Christian says that the tragedy here is that they won't see what he's created. As he turns around and Amelia just completely takes him out. She says that she's no one's plaything, and we finally get the fight we've been building up, right, guys? We get a pre-fight set of comments, and they get in their stances and go at it. So how do you guys feel about the Amelia Megan fight?
It's fine. I mean, I'm more surprised at how well implemented this all is, considering that none of these people really have any action experience. And it's made for a modest budget by comparison to a lot of what we've been seeing this summer.
Yeah, and I was ready for a fight of nothing but quick cut kind of crap. And it's quick cut, but when I look at something where I've realized how many bad Resident Evil movies that have been done for double or triple the budget and so many others, this is done surprisingly well. Like it's cut in a way that they linger just enough that it doesn't feel nauseating. And the fights, it lasts just long enough to be engaging. It's not so short that it's insulting. It's nicely done. And it's fun to watch.
Put that on the poster. It's not nauseating. The bomb is ticking down and Gemma says that she cannot leave Megan as Katie joins her. Amelia turns off the self-destruct as Gemma and Katie catch up to Megan. Megan says that this is when her story ends. Katie tries talking Megan out of it, and she says that she's not doing it because she has to. She's doing it because it's right. She approaches Amelia, who is all-powerful, as Gemma turns on Megan's self-destruct switch. And that's the end of Amelia here. How'd you feel about the end here?
Okay, this whole... Again, I go back to us recently discussing Mission Impossible, and I swear this is what happens to Tom Cruise when he went ahead and put those VR goggles on with the entity. Mm-hmm. he turned into Xenu himself. This reaches for it. It turns her into a literal like cyber god. Oh, shit. We discussed that film, too.
Yes, we Job. Did.
Job. Yeah, this is the Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
But it feels so much less insulting than it should because, I don't know, it feels in line with what this movie is. I have fun with it, and then I like the way that it happens with Megan as well. Like, I wasn't expecting it. I guess I kind of should. I think it parallels, again, that Gemma's going to sacrifice herself for Katie if she has to. So, I like it. I think it's done well enough, and it doesn't belabor the points.
And it's also not, this movie's not obsessed with being preachy or giving a real statement in a straight face type of way.
Yeah. Another movie would sit there and monologue for a while first.
Mm-hmm. We cut to Gemma at a conference where she says that they have to train it and be better parents so that they choose to be their allies instead of their enemies. We then cut to Gemma casing the chip as Megan AI gets in her laptop in the form of a paperclip because we knew this was coming out. And she says that she didn't think that she'd have them go through all that and not have a backup plan, did they? As credits roll, with highlights from both films being played behind the credits.
Caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting her to show up. I knew there was going to be something, but I literally thought it would be just post-credit as a way to say, hey, she's not really gone. So I'm glad they put it in the film. I'm glad they paid off that little frickin' paperclip that I used to hate so much.
Same.
Damn computer when I was trying to write something. So I think it's a good way to finish it off. And I think it's fun. It's fun. It fits. It's yeah, nicely done.
I feel like this was made for all the people who were sad that Arnold dipped himself into the molten lava.
Yeah.
Would not surprise me if that was James Wan's line of thinking. But what is our line of thinking? Scale of 1 to 10. What do we give Megan 2.0? Adam?
I don't want to like this movie because I didn't want this movie to happen. I thought the marketing was bad. I thought the release schedule was bad. I mean, this thing just tried to shove itself between so many other things and doesn't feel like a summer film. But damn if I don't have a fun time with this. Everybody that came back is playing the same character just a year or two later, so I don't feel like anybody has drastically changed. The story, as thin as it is, completely fits. It is a 90s plot point that I'm expecting Sandra Bullock to show up with a damn laptop in this thing. But with that, it is fun in a way that it shouldn't be. This thing's 2 hours, and it feels like a 95-minute, maybe hour and 40-minute breeze. I can't believe that. Like, I want this thing to be shorter, but I don't know what you cut because it's not necessary. It's light. It's fun. It's breezy. It continues the story, but it's not the horror doll from the first one. It is Terminator 2, but with a less annoying kid. Sorry, never liked Edward Furlong. And I wish this thing was caught on better. I hope people find it on digital. I hope it does well enough that we get more. I don't know if we need it, but you know, I do think that we're going to have a Megan 3D down the road. And yeah, I think if you've enjoyed the first one at all, or you just like that kind of 90s cheesy action film that is in the vein of, you know, whether it's Terminator 2, any of those, you know, early Seagal films, you'll have a fun time with this. Absolutely check it out. It's not a great time. It is a good time, though. It's a 7 on 10 every day of the week. And I can't believe that, because I was not expecting anything good out of this film. And I'm so glad I was pleasantly surprised.
I get it, Adam. You want to review The Net. Maybe we'll get to it.
Nope.
What'd you give it? I'm sorry.
7 on 10 every day of the week.
7 on 10 from Adam. Matt, could you go as high or higher?
Not only is the Terminator 2 comparison valid right down to the plot, I'm going to compare this to another sequel. This kind of has the Gremlins 2 factor for me, in that in a lot of ways it's satirizing the first movie that they made, and by extension other movies. I mean, Gremlins 2 has that. Although this doesn't have the thing of, well, I'll come back because I really don't want to and you're going to pay me. This does feel more like a labor of love, but I appreciate that they go as out there as they do and have this big of a shift, because I enjoyed this far more than I expected to. And I can't believe I watched a movie about artificial intelligence in the same summer as Mission Impossible and I liked this one better. That just blows my mind. If you would have told me that in January, I would have bet my mortgage that it would not have been the case. It's not perfect. There are parts where I feel like the comedy doesn't always hit, but that's going to happen when you have this many jokes a minute, and it's much more of a comedy than even the first one was, and it doesn't have that dark kind of overtone to it. It's a straightforward action movie. Action comedy, horror is a distant third. So all in all, it was a fun time. Not great, but well worth the matinee price that I paid to go see it. So I'm going to give it a very strong 7 as well.
Wow. You know, coming in, I didn't know what to expect. I had not heard that this was not an attempt at a horror film. I had not heard that this was pretty much a remake of Terminator 2. I hadn't heard any of that, but when I came out of this movie, I was thinking to myself, you know, that wasn't a horror film, and my God, I feel like I just watched this in the summer of 1991. That's not a knock, though. I like when movies throw people off, and I think a good judge of how I feel about a movie is when I walk out and there are so many people around me, and this used to happen when I'd go to David Lynch films a lot, and people were like, what the hell did I just watch? And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I had a good time with that, and if you didn't get it, then fuck you. Yeah, this was a good time. I could not believe how good of a time I had with this, to the point where I was really wanting to talk about it when it had initially come out, but Adam hadn't seen it, and then other things had come up, and we decided, you know what? Let's just wait on it. And I'm glad I did, because I was able to watch it again and get just as much enthusiasm as you guys. I want to go with a 7 as well. I'm sad that this did not make as much as the last one. I'm sad that this did not catch on with the public, but there's so much out there right now, one that we're going to review next week that I can't wait to talk about, that I was happy with the end conclusion. And guys, after Mission Impossible, God, was I happy to see AI done in a fun way and not in such a dour, terribly written way. So not perfect by any means, but I agree with my colleagues. 7 out of 10 as well. All right, guys, next week we are going to the comic book genre. We're going back to comic book films, to one of the most anticipated films of the year, James Gunn's Superman. Wow, I cannot tell you the expectations I have for this, because honestly, I don't know if they can be below what I think it's going to be. Matt, what are you expecting when we discuss Superman next week?
No clue. As I would describe my going into it, like my mental state, not excited, but not dreading it. Because I knew no matter what I was going to see, I had all the buildup. I haven't seen much of the trailers. I've only seen what I've been forced to see, like the Super Bowl spot and a couple other things. The amount of haymakers being thrown between the Snyder Bros and everyone else, including Gunn's got a pretty big fan base on his own right, it kind of soured me on going to see this, because I knew no matter what side I fell on, I'd have to get targeted by the other base. And that's just not the type of discussion I like having. I find it exhausting. I'm hopeful, but if I don't like it, I'm not going to be surprised, because I don't assess James Gunn's sensibilities with a character like Superman. I think what he's done with Guardians, Creature Commandos, Suicide Squad, you know, he's done outsiders and anti-heroes as his characters. And I think he works well in that to varying degrees. I don't associate that with the symbol of hope like Superman is. So I'm curious, but like I said, if I don't like it, I won't be all that surprised.
Okay, and for people asking, I don't think there was any way we could go much further without doing A, this one that's already left theaters, and B, Superman that's been in theaters for a couple weeks at the time we record this. Adam, sir, as a huge fan of James Gunn, what are you expecting when we discuss Superman next week?
Well, I'm worried. You know, I like a lot of Gunn's work, though there are some things that I think he takes himself too far that I just can't stand, and we're going to discuss some of those in the future. I thought he was a good person to help out over at DC, now what's DC Studios, but I don't like Superman. So I'm kind of in a middle of, I don't know what to expect. Is he the right person to direct this, more or less write this? Is he just the person to put it, you know, should Superman even be first? Because where do you go from there? You know, I really don't know. And my problem was, I felt, you know, much like Matt, I felt like whatever I walked out of that movie theater feeling, I was going to have to justify. And I don't like having to feel that way. I was probably highest on us for a lot of Zack Snyder's stuff that I shouldn't have to defend some of his work to want to go see Superman, you know. But then again, I saw 15 minutes of Rebel Moon, and Zack Snyder's never getting defense of me again. So I don't know what to tell you. I want a life in a DC Films universe. So I want it to be successful. I just don't know if it's in the hands to do it. So we'll see. I want to feel, and I want to feel good. And I guess we'll figure out if that happens or not.
All right. As far as my expectations, God knows my two colleagues know how close this character is to me. For me and Adam, being as good of friends as we are on the exact opposite ends. This is my favorite character. It's his least favorite. And the fact that James Gunn is doing this, it kind of scares me. But I'm going in with as open mind as possible. And the three of us, we don't discuss how we feel about these movies at all, but I did let these guys know my expectations, and I will get deeper into that when we discuss this movie next week. But I just hope he has enough sensibility to make this better than what we've seen the last, God, 30 or so years since we've had a great Superman film. So that's my thoughts. We'll get to our full thoughts on a very anticipated podcast next week. Boys, thanks for discussing finally a fun film. Because after Mission Impossible, I didn't think we'd get to one of these. But I'm happy we got to discuss something good that came with AI. But until next week, when we get to James Gunn's Superman, hold on to your podcasts. Thank you, boys. You shot it.
So we need to talk about school.
Can I bring Megan?
Katie, you know that's not possible.
Then I'm not going.
Oh, come on, Katie. Hey, I'm sorry. Let's just talk about it. Hey, hey, hey.
Let me go.
Whoa. Hey, what's going on? Hey, Katie. Go. What are you doing? Stop it. Katie, calm down.
Let her go. I'm bulletproof. Nothing to lose.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Three Men in a Retrospective Podcast.
She'll never run out of ways to keep your child occupied, and she'll never run out of patience.
Join us next week for an entirely new review.
How could you do this? How could you kill someone?
I didn't kill anyone. You did.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
You're not currently on our subscriber feed.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
Aunt Jem is right, Katie. I'm all odds and ends right now. I'd really rather you didn't see me like this.
The Three Men in a Retrospective Podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
When Megan is revealed, it's really important that we get big reactions.
Edited by Garrett. Voiceovers by Adam.
All the moisture has drained from your eyes and mouth into other parts of your body.
The Three Men in a Retrospective Podcast is for review and discussion, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
Is that so? Megan, turn off.